he allowed me to go through the board meeting minutes of Local 60 in 1907, because I went back to maybe January or February of 1907 through 1908 to see some mention of 471s being admitted into the Federation or something about their charter, because Curtis keeps telling me that the parent local had the charter, you know, and I, you know, but I didn't see anything in their minutes. No mention of 471, no mention of this local whatever. So, you know, then the next thing, you know, we contacted Sprague at the Federation, and they came up with that date. You know, it's all they could give us.
Mm-hmm. But to show you how the plain locals come up, I happened to be down in Philadelphia, I think it was back in maybe 47.
Okay.
And I wasn't even looking for a job, but some of the musicians down there knew me. And I got a call and wanted me to come to, it was a club called Rabbit Club between Chester and Whitefoot. And I believe it was New Year's Eve night. One night, I said, for some reason or other, I didn't get a contract. The first place got called last minute. But they were able to trace back. A couple of lenders had called me and got the notion, and I owed them this tax, you know.
Did you find by your appearance that you were accepted on a lot of the white jobs easier? Do you think it was an easier, because you could pass, you know, a lot of times it would be the fact that,
well, I don't think it really made that put it this way. I'm not a money man like Mike Harmer or some of those, but I've been able to hold my own.
Right.
When I went in those clubs, I practically was on the same level with those guys, you know, financially.
Right.
But see, most of those clubs I've been on, I've carried my wife with me down to the Rolling Rock Club.
I know. She told me about it. Yeah, we were talking one night. She told me about that, yeah. Because I know, because when I first got connected with Joe Marone and them, between Jerry and Doc, and they were talking, and they said, you know, being light-skinned, it was easier for me, you know, getting into...
I can see in a lot of instances. But by the same token, if you go the other way... I find with the... There was more problem replaying with our boys because mostly black women thought they had a white guy. He didn't want to talk to me.
I know. See? Did you do much writing in your early days with Brown and them? Did you?
I used to do some things. Like I used to do some. You know, back then the Musicians Magazine used to advertise for arrangers. I sent in stuff for several bands. You know.
Do you know anything about the WPA bands? And
WPA was back when I was in Atlantic City. See, my dad got sent to, that's where he got moved to Atlantic City during the Depression.
And
when it happened, my dad was an Amy Zion minister, and they had padlocked the church in Atlantic City, you know, couldn't lay there. Whatever the churches had been. He went there and got that church opened back up. Stayed there 6 years till I came out of high school. No, I started to high school. So I went back down to North Carolina. When I came out of the eighth grade, went into ninth. Well, every Sunday back then, WPA band used to come and give a concert.
Were they like brass bands or?
Oh, yeah, the brass, the whole thing.
Yeah, okay.
And then you phone in. That's when I really learned about the instruments. Every time most people talk about a bass, all they think about is the big tuba.
Were they strictly all black bands, or were
they white bands? All white.
Okay, because Curtis tells me about the bands here, but it was white bands.
Well, you can remember back in the '30s, Atlantic City, the only word blacks did was in on hotels. Seasonal, and they'd come all over the world. But that was the only work to
the they would do.
They'd been in, club band, big band, military band. But they all were really musicians.
Professional musicians. Did you find, was the musicianship, the way guys felt towards playing music and towards you play to the house, you play to the audience. Do you find that in those earlier days and those older days that we were more considerate of the customers and we played, we tried to please the people more? Because now it seems like musicians want to please other musicians.
Not the light, the customer. That's the reason. Why do you think Yann Lombardo stayed around all those years?
Yes, that's success.
Because
I remember Walt Harper sent us up. This was after Art Nance went to the Army, so it was just quartet. Me and Horace, and we went up to New Kensington, up to whatever that club was up there where he was working. He sent us up to sub for him one night, and we went up. And yourself, if people dance, they must like what they're, what they're listening to. From the first tune until we wrapped up, they was dancing, they was having a good time. They enjoyed it. Right.
I worked two jobs with Bruno Gibson, and he used to work up called the Alhambra Club up in Butler, PA.
Oh, okay.
And it was another club, but he only had a little trio, but there again.
Yeah, but they danced. And Walt called me up Monday and said, Chuck, baby, I don't know what happened, man, but blah, blah, blah. And a guy said this, that. And I said, okay. And I understood what it was all about, see, because Walt, not that we were threatening him or anything like that, but that's his problem. Walt wants to be the main man. And we, because they danced from the time we started playing until the time we packed up. They had a good time. But he's trying to tell me, oh, and they didn't seem to like your band, man. I wish I could help you do some more. I said, no problem.
Walt's been known for that. I did a thing with him not too long ago over here while he was sick. Sat in with his band over there at James Street, and the night we went over there, and the guys were going to tell you he didn't send a bass player, and they said he knew why, because he didn't want
to pay.
No, he didn't want the band to sound good.
Well, we know him. Did you do much playing like down in the Musicians Club? That downstairs was that piano bar thing, wasn't it? Wasn't it on that first level when you come in and you go back on the first floor?
Yeah, that was later, but I didn't play down there. I used to play upstairs.
With bands, yeah. But I remember there was that piano bar downstairs. Yeah. Well, when did they start that? Then you say it was later.
Yeah. I would say in the mid 40s. Yeah. I'd say towards the end of the 40s.
Towards the end of the 40s. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because I know when I got out of because I got out in 47.
Yeah.
And I didn't start going down there until 48 after I joined. Uh-huh. And I know that was, because there's a white piano that was back in there.
Yeah.
And that was in the little bar that thing was going towards the street. But your work was all upstairs with Leroy and things like that. Yeah.
But that's when all these...
Everything was happening.
All these out of town musicians coming in.
Yeah.
Like, we used to have fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Them those days, like, we playing maybe Body and Soul. Like, Leroy and us, we'd be playing it in D-Natural.
Okay.
And these guys, you know, come in and start taking the horns out, and they started fiddling.
Right, what's going on?
After a while, you see him putting the horn back in.
Right.
Because it didn't play in all these.
Did you ever hold any offices in the union?
No.
On any boards or anything?
I didn't see never seen nothing in there.
Pays your dues and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's a funny thing. I'll say this, even with the black musicians. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh is a funny town. Most of the stuff back here, if you were a native Pittsburgher, you didn't...
Yeah, right. It is.
Yeah.
It is. And you know, one of the things I think, one way of detecting that, if you're an outsider and you come into Pittsburgh, you have an overall view, you can sense it better than somebody who lives here. See, we don't seem to understand that. You know, a lot of guys, plus the fact that there's a lot of them that have never been away from here, they've never been on the road, they've never experienced anything, and they're very narrow, their views are narrow, but like you said, it's a cliquish place.
Yeah.
It's a very cliquish place. What was your feeling of the merge? I mean, how did you, personally, and also looking at it from the standpoint of what was going to happen to the rest of the black musicians.
No, I was not for the merge because it wasn't done internally.
Mm-hmm.
It had been a gradual talk thing between 60, 71 over the years. And the way it was done,
the
government did it.
Right. Because they didn't want us and we didn't want to go down there.
And what proves that? You see how long the fight went on in Chicago, and Buffalo, because they had suits, and they had way more property, way more money than the white lord.
Right. And you see what happened.
I couldn't see it.
Well, all right. Now look at it this way. Do you feel that the merge helped you in terms of your career CBEC, you had made connections, you were already working with white bands.
Yeah, but Stan knew me when I was with 471 before that.
Right,
so it didn't matter. Not enter into it.
Right, it didn't matter.
He had offered me a job back then.
Right.
It wouldn't take a long time before that.
For some of the young piano players and young musicians coming along, what kind of advice or what kind of information would you give to them?
I find that most of the younger musicians coming up now want to get the basic, once they learn a couple of scales.
Yeah. Instant success.
I often tell especially a piano player, if they can sit down and take, I don't care what the nomination, what is it, Methodist, if he can sit down and start on page one and play every hymn in that book from back front go, he can read anything.
And that's his exercise book, but they don't see it.
Hymns are written in every
they sure done. Is. Yeah.
Plus, as you know, when you were going to the organ, of course, it's more extended than that.
Yeah.
You know, your cantatas.
Yeah.
Your anthems.
Yeah, different forms of music. Yeah.
And all Swords of Keys, an 05 Sharps, Six Floods. You play 8 bars, and all of a sudden, it's 2 bars where you're in the
another key. Right,
and then all of a sudden, you're going from 2 bars to 6, 8, or...
Was there a lot of reading music, like that King Perry Pancake?
Oh, yeah,
that's it.
You had to read.
Yeah, see, that's it. And there came a period of time when we got away from that. We started, you know, playing, you know, learning from memory or listening to records.
Yeah.
You know.
Perry still had a band. You know, he had about, about 14 or 15 pieces.
But the arrangements,
The arrangements, and when you played for these shows,
they had their own music, right.
Yeah.
But like you said about young musicians, they just don't. I mean, first of all, they don't want to listen. I mean, whatever you're trying to tell them, it seems like they're too abrasive. They don't want to hear it from you, you know. But reading music, I mean, I found that's almost like a man or a given. I mean, you've got to be able to read music, you know, and solo, and that's an added dimension to your playing. But if you can read, you know, you can work.
Yeah.
You know, and because I get a lot of guys ask me about the jobs and things that I've been on and so forth. But you got to be able to read, you know.
See, now, if somebody comes up to the club and they ask, you know, musicians, they've never heard it. They can't play it. But back in those days, the leader could take out the thing and lay it down.
Right.
You know what happened when we had that suit?
Okay.
When Doc was still there.
Yeah.
Remember after that, they tried to get musicians to come down and read some of that stuff with the ice capades and how many we could come up with?
Because I know it was rough. It was rough. Because, I mean, I blame us, because I used to tell Doc and him, like our group, because that the last rehearsal band or the last period of time that we had was when Ducky with that 10-piece group that we had. But other than that, we didn't do any ensemble playing, anything of that nature that would prepare you for those kinds of jobs. And that's where Doc and I, we kind of fell out, because I'm trying to tell him that that's what it is. And then you got guys that come through like Nelson, and guys that would say, well, reading music, you don't have to read no music, because Basinen didn't read music, and people bought into that. But maybe there wasn't, in those early Basie days in the early 30s or whatever, maybe they didn't have a lot of it written down. Mm-hmm. But later on, they did. They had, but you've got to read. I don't care how you look at it. You've got to read music. did you do any teaching?
No, I never liked teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I might have taught several kids, you know, basics.
Yeah.
But I never went into that.
Yeah.
But see, later days, that's the advantage a pianist has. See, I've always been able to make more money by myself.
Right.
Well, I can still go out and do a party today and make $300.
Right. Is it a thought? Because I keep trying to push Jerry Elliott, you know, to try to be a little more progressive, try to get involved in doing more solo piano work. But, you know, what is it? I mean, what do you have to? How do you approach playing as a singer?
Well, number one, you have to have a good idea of where your skills and composition and other things come in, counterpoint and counter melodies and so forth. It's nothing, something you don't gain in you know, 2 or 3 6-hour lessons.
Experience.
It's like pipe organ business. You can't hardly find a black pipe organ today, because we have a contest about every 4 years or 5 years in, mm-hmm. in the NAM, which, you know, I'm mm-hmm. with, and paperboarding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Students are not there.
Yeah.
But a paperboarding, you can't learn a paperboarding in 1 or 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, paperboarding plays, can take the place of an orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you got everything right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You take, symphony, mm-hmm. Big paperboard.
And wipe it out.
Yeah.
Because I know, I remember 1 year we did a thing, we used to do a religious thing at over Thanksgiving time. It was a 2-day affair. I know, I think it was a Catholic youth organization or something, I don't know what it is. But 1 year they had a fabulous organ player come down. Mm-hmm. And he and it was almost like that Phantom of the Opera kind of thing. I mean, the Kennedy Music Hall, but it was mm-hmm. roaring. You know, I mean, the way he was playing.
Yeah, but it makes a difference when you get back mm-hmm. to the reading, mm-hmm. Your dexterity and
right
and playing,
touch, yeah,
and all that. The separates the man from the boy. Mm-hmm. Put it that way.
Mm-hmm. This is like when they came through with Jimmy Smith and some of these young organ players. And they're playing the left hand, they're playing the bass on the left hand, and they might be moving their foot around,
yeah,
but they ain't touching no pedals.
Yeah, many times I yeah. see them going up the scale,
right.
And unfortunately, that's the same thing is going on a lot of these churches, especially the Baptist and all, mm-hmm. and these big, you know, gospel things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're doing the same thing, right. Still not playing the pedals.
Yeah, right.
Shamming with that.
Right. Yeah,
and
you've been a big help to us. Like I said,
huh? I'll tell you another thing. See that again? You'll notice in the scales of the union, they also have a scale of church organists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I said.
Mm-hmm.
Now see, that's the difference. Now even in the black church
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
I can still command $200 for
right.
an hour and a half service.
Right.
Some musicians yeah. want 3 jobs.
Right.
Before they
don't get that kind of money. And there's an awful lot of church work. I found my connection with a lot of these white guys. There's an awful lot of church work where they use musicians.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, but we don't, I mean, because my first, you know, church morning service was with white, you know.
But again, in churches like the mm-hmm. East Liberty, the choir does have things. If you have never been exposed to arias,
right,
you know,
right.
What are you
yeah.
going to do?
Yeah. You just don't know. Yeah, like I said, I think we've covered a lot. Is there any how do you view the future of music for, you know, for a lot of black players?
I don't think you can just mm-hmm. lump the black player in, because you've got a situation right now, if it keeps going,
mm-hmm.
and now we're talking about with your digital.
Oh yeah, right.
So, stuff, yeah, the way they're doing now, you can see going in the clubs.
Yeah.
How many hotels now? You don't see a musician.
Right.
They got that digital
right.
thing.
And it sounds like a
it's gonna start hurting orchestras.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's almost back to that period of time. When they used to put what was that rhythm that thing piano players used to put on it was a rhythm kind of thing, you know, displaced the drummer.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then when the organ came through, then there you eliminated the bass player, you know, and then and recordings a lot of the taping and things that are done, because we've said this in terms of the ice show. The musicians, we've driven ourselves out of work, you know, because they take.
I have a friend out here in the Forest Hills. His people run a restaurant, Drew's,
mm-hmm.
well known out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the boy's hobbies. Now he's got enough money to buy and sell. But in his house, I tuned his piano for quite a number of years. He has all that equipment. I've seen him sit down and take one note and one voice. And when he gets finished with that apparatus and the equipment, he come out with something sounding like the Mormon choir with a symphony. This is what I'm saying. Even in churches, preachers don't need to come one day and
push a button.
Where you won't need no choir.
It's progress. Is that what you call it?
So in the clubs, you know, in hotels, when I get around the Shrine Convention, I visit a whole lot of hotels. See, they don't have a lot of music. The guys making first it was the records. Now it's the, their discs. And the CDs and now the digital stuff. Every time you get some scientific thing, musician is going further down the track.
First one. It's something. I think the only thing we can do, is just thank heaven that we came through the period of time that we did come through, because we got the best of the time.
Now, this year, I'm sure you've seen it, and we have a president of the Piano Technicians Guild. I introduced him to NAB way back in about 52, 53, out in Portland, Oregon. Marshall Hawkins from Washington, D.C. He, 6 years ago, was the national president. And back then, we didn't even have six registered black piano technicians. We still don't have that many across the country. We had some problems within our national bickering. Started getting personal. Marshall's back this year as the president again. He's married to a white woman. But what's unique, he has been put on the national panel at the Smithsonian Institute for celebrating the 300th year of the piano. Because we're participating in it, but I said to myself, told my wife, I says, I can't be around, but I'd like to see where the piano is 300 years from now.
Where it's going to go. I mean, even when you think back to what's clavichord?
Clavichord.
Those early ones, Celeste. Early in the advancements and then so forth, what's been done. It's interesting, But like you said, for young musicians coming through now, it's to think in terms of a future, it does look kind of bleak.
At this particular period, because you know what's happened with most school districts, including Pittsburgh, they took the music out. You used to have a piano in every room where kids. Self-contained rooms. They'll put $1.5 million out of the football field, lighting, and won't spend $5,000 for instruments and stuff in there till they get that reverse.
I think we've covered a lot. Can't think of any other thing I need from you.